Hey, ghoul friends, it's time for another episode of Horror and a Half, the podcast where every other week we get together to talk about horror and the horror inspired. I'm your host, Rose Kez Wicked.
And I'm your other host, Kelly Goulahan.
Hi, Kelly.
Hey, Rose.
How's life?
You know, muddling right on through. How are you?
That's good. Me too, mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, yep, that's it. Getting ready for our trip.
Yeah. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Got real senioritis.
Oh my god, yeah.
It's like the week before spring break.
It kind of is. It's been so long.
Yes. Oh, the joys of travel.
Yeah.
Get ready.
Went out and bought new tiny shampoos.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I anticipate using the stuff at hotels, but what if they don't have enough?
You might need more tiny shampoos.
I might.
It's exciting.
Yeah, being like, just bring one small tube of toothpaste. Don't bring two. Don't be weird about it. You can buy more small toothpaste if you need it.
If you need more toothpaste, it can be done.
I was going to say, at the fucking fancy place we're staying, maybe they provide toothpaste. I don't know.
I bet. You could ask.
It fucking costs enough.
Axel Foley wants some toothpaste,
please. He wants some toothpaste, please. Yeah. So that'll be exciting.
Yes, it will. So I didn't do anything horror inspired. I think you did some stuff.
I did
so
one
thing.
You
want to talk about it? Oh, you sure. Did one thing. I thought you did more. I don't know.
What other thing did you think I did?
I didn't have, like,
hold on, I have to
things
check.
In mind. I was just like, oh, Kelly's doing stuff.
I mean, I spent a lot of this weekend being like, I should watch Frankenhooker, and then I did not watch Frankenhooker.
Okay. Well, that doesn't count.
No, it does.
That's
oh, right.
You didn't do.
I did not do that. I still might before it leaves the Criterion Channel.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, it was part of their 90s collection, which the other thing I did was part of. But first, you're right. There was another thing. I failed to write it down. I want to talk a little bit about the Alien sequels.
Oh, yeah. You've been watching Alien.
I've been watching Alien. I rewatched Alien. Still didn't like it. Still a Philistine about Alien. But I watched Aliens, Alien 3, and Alien Resurrection for the first time.
Wow.
Yeah. I think I liked every one of them better than Alien.
Than Alien with no dollar sign?
With no dollar sign. Which, again, I know is not popular, and you can come yell at me on Twitter if you like. I understand and I accept this. You watched Aliens sometime last year, I think.
Yes.
And we're like, it's not really a horror movie, and you're right, it's not.
No.
I had fun.
I mean, lots of those guys run around.
They do. Bill Paxton lives for a long time, which was delightful.
Very action-adventure, not very horror.
Like, they are horrified when there are a bunch of aliens
well,
in the ceiling.
Yeah, the xenomorph is horrifying.
Yeah.
But the Great Movie Ride is scarier than aliens with a dollar sign.
I mean, the Great Movie Ride is scarier than all of these movies, because the alien comes for you. Also, the Great Movie Ride is dead now. Which is sad.
Which, yeah. What's scarier than the ghost of the Great Movie Ride?
What if they put the xenomorph in Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway?
What if they did?
And it had little ears. It had little Mickey ears. I like it.
Disney, put the xenomorph back in your parks challenge. You've removed it twice now.
You
and it's
cowards.
Insulting.
For
children. Whatever.
Who cares? Jerk off motion.
Scariest fucking thing in my life, alien encounter.
Never wrote it. Too scared.
It's very scary.
Wrote the Stitch version. Didn't love it. But yeah, no. Mom and dad would like tell stories about like families bullying their children onto alien encounter and watching those people like break down in hysterics. I'm like, I've right to never ride that. I'll ride the people mover. Thanks.
It hurts your shoulders just like Stitch, but
yeah.
In a scary way.
But, yeah, and, like, they wrote it early when I think they took this out later, that like blood gets dripped on you, like not real blood obviously, but like it's implied that a man is killed above you and then water drips on you.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that it was in Tomorrowland.
For children.
I don't know if you could put anything scary in a place that ends with land like that. It's Tomorrowland. It's the future. You'll be killed by an alien. In the future. I for sure-sies, though, had the plush little alien from the pre-show who gets, like, transported. The little six-legged beige guy, Skippy. I had one of those. Funny. Yeah, he's still around somewhere. He's in a bag, you know, bin, you know, storage unit. While watching Aliens, I was like, is this my second favorite James Cameron movie? And it might be.
With Avatar being number one?
Boy, do I love... No, it's Terminator's number one. A good movie? A good movie. Everyone who is out there loving James Cameron, have fun. Godspeed. He's mostly not for me, but I liked Aliens. Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection, aka Alien 4, are movies with problems. But I do want to put in a good word for what you can only describe as, in the slasher movie style, kills. They both have pretty good kills in them.
Nice.
There's one in Alien 3. So there's only one alien in Alien 3. Like, an alien gets in a dog, and then it's running around real fast.
I thought the alien was cubed.
The alien was not cubed. It's just the one alien.
And I've seen the behind the scenes of that dog.
Yeah. I think they mostly skipped that dog in favor of CGI.
Yeah, because it looks like a dog.
It does look like a dog. But let me tell you, the CGI looks like shit. Like, having heard Blank Check's series on David Fincher and how he's such a perfectionist, like, no wonder he doesn't want to talk about movie. Yeah, no
wonder.
When the alien is a puppet or a person in a suit, looks great. You know, they have mastered that. In all of these movies, the aliens that are physical and practical look pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The CG aliens in Alien Resurrection look better than the one in 3, you know, pretty okay. But they literally could not look worse. Like, it's just the right era of CG where you just, it's like a clip art floating. Like, it's not touching anything. Looks terrible. But, so there's one alien, and like, one of the kills in this movie is a guy gets startled by the alien. Like, it spits on him from out of a tube, and he panics and rolls backward into a big fan and is chopped into a million pieces and blood flies everywhere. And I was like, yes, this is great. People's, like, heads get squashed. Like, you see it happen. Alien 3 is a gnarly movie. And it does end, spoilers, with Ripley going in a vat of molten lead.
Nice.
Because she's infected with an alien. The problem, I think, with Alien 3 is that it is a prison planet where all the dudes wear burlap sacks and have shaved heads and look like English character actor Potato Men. So they all look the same. And it's a real issue. Anytime someone dies, it's fucked up and fun. It made me say to my coworker that sometimes cinema is about throwing a bucket of fake blood on somebody. And she was horrified by this. And then the weekend following, she watched a Leprechaun movie and laughed at some of the kills and thought to herself, Kelly would like this. I don't know that I would, but I'm glad you're getting on board. Alien Resurrection also has good kills. At one point, Leland Orser has a chestburster go through a guy's head out of his chest and through this guy's head. It's way too much, but it was funny. But my favorite thing about Alien Resurrection is Ripley is back after going in the lava. But she's a clone, and she's part alien. Which what this means is she acts real weird, she has cool alien nails, and there are also like 8 more clones of her that are all shitty and in tubes, and she burns them with a flamethrower.
And which alien is this in?
Resurrection. It's the fourth
one.
Yeah. The ship's also like going to Earth. Also, three starts like 2 does, where she's went into hypersleep, she comes out, her friends from 2 were all dead, and she wakes up on this place, and an alien hitched a ride, and it goes into a dog, and they have a hard time. And in the end, she saves everyone by going in the lava. Alien 4 is they recovered, like, what little bit of DNA they could from her lava corpse. And they have been attempting to clone her ever since because she had an alien in her. And it's Weyland-Yutani, obviously, who recovered the corpse. And they want that alien so bad they will just spend forever cloning a little charcoal chunk. I guess they don't know where to find them? I don't know how they don't know. Go back to the first place everyone went to. Was all that information lost? And when, you know, when you get to the movie, we have Ripley 8, who is a scary lady who is psychically connected to aliens with cool nails. She dunks a basketball in this movie. Like, she does a big jump and dunks a basketball. She beats up Ron Perlman, and then he wants to have sex with her because she's scary. She's pretty gay with Winona Ryder.
Nice.
But the other thing about this ship is there's a number of aliens on it. And she has some memories of being Ripley, but she also is a weird dinosaur woman. And she's like, you can't keep those. They're bad. Brad Dourif is here as like a weirdo scientist who truly tries to make out through glass with an alien. Like, the alien gets up to the glass and he gets his face next to the glass and they're both mushing their mouths against the glass. He gets kidnapped by an alien and covered in goo. It's the setup's very similar because it's like you're on a ship. This time there are like three aliens. Also, the aliens learn and they're like, we have acid blood, and if we kill one of the four of us, we can acid blood our way out of our prison cell. So that's what they do.
Cool.
There is also a queen. When they successfully cloned Ripley, they successfully managed to clone a queen. But because Ripley is part alien, the twist is the queen is part human. And the big reveal at the end, like after they fight the last three aliens and she crisps them and her clones, and they're just trying to get on a ship to leave and to keep this ship from going to Earth and letting an alien run around on Earth. They find the queen that got cloned, and the big reveal is, again, the queen is part human, and so instead of laying a bunch of eggs, she's got a uterus now, and she births one human-alien hybrid, which mostly means it looks like an alien, but with human skin on top, and it has very soulful puppet eyes. And I'm like, this is not, what's the benefit of this? You used to have a million very efficient little babies. And now you have one who looks extra gooey and who hates its mom's ass because it immediately kills the queen. Like, instantly. It turns around and is like, chomp, chomp.
Yeah, that seems like an evolutionary disadvantage.
In every way. In every way. What is the benefit? You're going to do a lot of rearing? That's whatever. I can't talk about R versus fucking K or whatever methods of reproduction. Ripley and this human alien hybrid bond, like, it doesn't kill her because it recognizes her as like its other mom, kind of. And they like tenderly touch each other's faces, but all the, like, Ron Perlman and Winona Ryder, all the pirates who were left who were here, because they were pirates, they're like pirates who brought them bodies. Why not? To put aliens in? Like, that's how they get fucking Leland Orser. He's just a rando who they kidnapped and put an alien in him. And so he's a ticking time bomb for, like, the last third of this movie. And then he goes off. They're like, you can't be friends with that alien. That alien can't make it to Earth. It's still bad. It's an alien. And they end up killing this alien. Like, Ripley herself has acid blood because she's part alien. So she acid bloods a window in, like, a cargo bay, and it makes, a small hole. Not, like, quarter-sized, bigger than that, but not huge. Not baseball-sized. And this alien-human hybrid gets sucked out of this hole that's, like, the size of maybe a coaster. And it's real sad about it. It has real soulful eyes, like I said. And it blinks a lot and screams as it is ripped out into space due to the vacuum of space. And, like, its skull explodes. It's very silly. What an ending. And then they go to Earth, and that's the end of the movie. It's not very good, but evil alien... All right, semi-evil alien Lady Ripley. Very good.
Yeah, that sounds... That part sounds fun.
Sigourney Weaver is having a blast. Like, you know, obviously they had to give, you know, she wanted to die in the third one. Like, Ripley has to die. I'm done with these. And I can see why this concept and getting to do what she does in this movie was, she's like, okay, I'll come back.
You know, I'll come back and be wild.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I do think it's like, if you've never seen it because you've heard it's bad, I think some of the kills are good. I think some of the puppets are good. Brad Dourif's real weird. But it's definitely absolutely worth it, because it's only like an hour 40 or something, to see her and what she's doing and her cool evil nails. It's a fun, fun performance at the center of this movie. So those are them aliens. Next up is Prometheus, but I haven't had time. And also I've seen Prometheus, and I'm not a Prometheus supporter.
No, boo to Prometheus.
Yeah. Then I get to watch Covenant after that, and I hear Michael Fassbender makes out with himself, so...
Well.
You know.
Yeah.
There are things. Yes, my coworker went to see it, like, in theaters, maybe, and told me it was catering to the gay agenda, and I'm like, what does that mean? She's like, Michael Fassbender makes out with himself? And I'm like... Well, that's the first thing that's made me want to see it. So maybe it is catering to the gay agenda. There's a new one of those coming out this year. Do you know that?
Unsurprising.
It's called Alien Romulus.
Oh, yeah, I think I did hear that.
Yeah. Not Ridley Scott, though. I don't know why they didn't let him do it. Was he too busy Napoleoning?
He had to shoot the pyramids.
Because, I mean, at this point, I feel like you might as well let him go. Do whatever, Ridley, with your aliens. But they did not.
Let him cook.
You aliens think you're so great just because you have boats.
Oh, Napoleon.
The only bit of Napoleon I've seen. But it is A+. Yeah, so
he's a little freak.
It made me want to be, I'm like, I should watch Napoleon sometime. If it ever gets a physical release, I can get it out of the library. I'll probably watch Napoleon. You think you're so great. Because you have boats. But the other thing I did that is worth talking about is horror, is I watched Deaf by Temptation.
Okay.
Which was also, much like Frankenhooker, on the Criterion Channel as part of their 90s collection from last September, October.
We love it.
Do love it. I'm wondering if they're going to do an aughts collection this year, because they've done 70s, 80s, 90s. Oh. I'm like, what would you put in an aughts horror collection? I don't know, but I might get to find out. This is a trauma film, which was a surprise to me, because I've never seen a trauma film before, because I don't... Like, I don't need to see The Toxic Avenger. It's not high on my list of things to do. But Deaf by Temptation is a little movie about two friends. I'm going to say it's mostly about Joel, except it's not. It's in like two pieces. So the movie is set up around Joel. Joel okay. is a young man who lives in... I think the Carolinas somewhere. He was raised by his grandmother after his parents died in a car crash because a woman was standing in the road. This woman is a demon who haunts his family and who's killed members of his family for a long time. Also, his dad is Samuel L. Jackson, which was surprising because this is like 1990, maybe? I think it's a pretty early role for him. And he's not in it very much because he dies in a car crash. Joel comes from a line of preachers. It opens with Samuel L. Jackson doing a practice preach, and he sees a weird ghost lady in the pews behind his son. This is right before they get in that car accident. Joel is followed in his father's footsteps. He's gone to, like, gosh, I don't know what priest school is called. I've learned nothing about religion and I never will. But he is feeling, he's having dreams about the accident and about mm-hmm. the ghost lady. And he is feeling a little hemmed in. And his grandmother has a very important scene where she says to him, like, your crossroads gonna hit you, like, right before you think you're done or whatever. Like, you gotta make a choice. When you least expect it, when you think it's over, that's when you're gonna be presented with your crossroad.
Okay.
And he's like, I'm gonna go visit my best friend, Kay, in New York. And then for a while, the movie is about Kay. I think he's played by Kadeem Hardison. Kay's great. Love Kay. He's very charming. It's a really fun, like, charming center performance. Kay lives in New York. He's trying to be an actor. We don't get that much about it because this is a pretty low budget film. We, like, mm-hmm. see his apartment and we see a bar where he hangs out. And so we get a sense of what's happening in the bar. Like, there's this guy there named Dougie who is constantly lying to women about what his job is, which we know because we never see him say the same thing twice. He's also claiming to be things like a surgeon and a race car driver and maybe a race car driver who does surgery.
All very plausible.
Yeah.
I know what the problem is.
He's got all these, you know, it's never a normal job. We see in the cold open a bartender get picked up by a hot lady in this bar and then get taken. Like, he decides to meet her at her house. It's a fancy house. He goes up these stairs. She has a fancy room. They have sex. They go into the shower to maybe have more sex. And then the shower turns into a blood shower. And she starts clawing him up. And as he tries to run away, we see that the room is not fancy. It is, in fact, basically empty. There's, like, a cardboard box in there. Like, clearly it was all some sort of glamour. And he gets killed against the door. That's the cold open before we meet Joel or Kay. We see this woman again. She's at the bar. This woman is always at the bar. And she's so hot, people are always buying her drinks. We see another guy. Like, after we've met Kay and we're getting a sense of his milieu, we see a guy come into this bar and, like, we see him take his wedding ring off and he approaches this woman and we see her take him home and it's the same house and it's like a different fancy room and they have sex and she claws him up, but, like, in a sex way, not in a murder way. And he gets upset because he's like, how on earth am I going to hide the fact that I had sex with someone else from my wife with these huge claw marks down my back? And she's like, not my fucking problem, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And then he leaves. She does not kill him, but she tells him that she has given him something like a going away present. And you're like, what on earth is she talking about? And when he pauses downstairs and looks in the mirror, he appears to be turning into some kind of oozy zombie and he freaks out about it. And there's, like, a third encounter with a queer man where she fucks this guy to death as well. She does not she kills him on the bed. But in between two of these, she meets Kay and Kay is very charmed by her. And, like, she does not try to pick Kay up the same way she has done with these other people. Like, she's playing very, like, innocent and sweet with him. They exchange numbers. They decide that they should meet up again sometime. And the third murder she does is juxtaposed with Kay telling Joel, who has just gotten into town, about this girl he met at the bar. And, like, she's so sweet. And then we cut to her in her house with this third guy. And she's being a real jerk. And it's like, she's so gentle. And we cut to her in the house with this guy. And she's, like, throwing him against a wall or whatever. Like, it's just, like, cutting back and forth between Kay's meeting with her and her killing a guy in the opposite ways.
Cool.
Yeah. And so Joel is a little judgmental about New York and the people in it. Not that we see them, like, outside, because this movie doesn't have much of a budget for that. And Kay's like, no, you can't be judgmental about this sort of things. Like, real life is where you're from and real life is here. Like, it's all real life and you got to understand that. He decides to take Joel out to the bar, even though Joel doesn't drink. And he's like, no, this is the other set. This is the bar. We got to go there. And he's like, you should, you know, maybe you can meet a lady. And Joel does meet a lady. And do you know who that lady is?
Who dat?
It's the evil lady. It's the same lady.
It's the evil lady.
And Kay's like, what the hell? And this lady acts like she has never met him. And Kay's like, what the actual fuck? And so Joel and this woman, her name is Temptation, are like going out. They're meeting at the bar. They're having a time. And Kay is like, why is she being weird? Why is she doing this? Why did she come into my house and pretend like she doesn't know me? And then that quickly gets swept away for Kay, because while she's in his house pretending she doesn't know him, and her and Joel leave to go out on a date, Kay realizes she doesn't have a reflection in his mirror. He's got like a big mirror, and he's like, hold on. He's like looking back and forth. Joel does not notice. She does not react. And he's like, okay, am I crazy? And there's been like the new bartender at the bar is like, I don't know, the last guy disappeared. I think he was hitting on that lady. And Kay goes in there, and Dougie is there, and he's like, hey, Dougie, I have to talk to someone, and it turns out you're the only other character in this movie. And that lady didn't have a reflection. And Dougie earlier had been like, that lady has bad vibes. Like, I see her leave with people, and I never see those people again. And you're like, whatever, Dougie, you're an idiot. But he is right. And Dougie does not think Kay is crazy, because it turns out that Dougie is a member of the X-Files. He is an undercover federal agent who is following up on leads of a hot lady is killing many people. Evilly. Demonically, possibly. He brings Kay home, and he's got like a red string wall of like different like missing notices and reports of like mutilated bodies or whatever. And reports going back a long time of a lady matching this description, like fucking with people. And Kay's like, hold on, you've been an undercover agent this whole time? And Dougie is like, yes, I have been. And you're lucky, because no one else will believe you, because it's crazy. But it's not crazy, it's real. And Kay's like, should we get backup? And Dougie is like, I am not that important in the FBI.
I can't get you anything, actually.
We will have to do this ourselves, probably. So let's.
I'm Fox Mulder over here. Nobody listens to me.
He is a real. I'm like, oh man, him and Fox should be. Like, he should be a founding member of the X-Files, because I think this is like 1990. It's like, this is before that. They could be hanging out, except for what happens in this film. So they're like, all right, we're going to get guns, we're going to get knives, we're going to get holy water, and we're going to try and save Joel. And before they do this, and like, Joel has been here, and he's going to be way more important in like the last quarter of this movie, but it's mostly a movie about Kay at this point. And Kay's like, Joel, I think you should go home. And Joel's like, why? Because I'm having a nice time in New York and I've met a lady. And Kay frames it as, you know, I met her first and then she pretended like she didn't know me. I think that's weird. I think her vibes are bad. And Joel is like, you're jealous and you didn't think I could do anything. And I have. And now you're getting on my case about it. And he's like, I'm just trying to protect you. And he's like, I'm an adult. I can take care of myself. And Kay is like, Kay never says that lady's an ancient demon. He should, though. They go to like a fortune teller, and try to get some guidance. This is when they find out that this lady is not just a demon. I mean, she is, but she is a demon that has been like stalking Joel's family for generations. And that her ultimate goal is the corruption of a true innocent, aka Joel, and that you can't let that happen because that'll be her winning and that'd be really bad. In the middle of this meeting, that demon does possess this woman and scream at them that they cannot win to fight with the beast. They're like, all right, we gotta go. And then it's a fun scene, but it's unfortunate for me because of how much I like Kay. Kay goes home. They try to, like, kidnap her before he goes home. They try to drug her with holy water and kidnap her.
Well, that's not very nice.
Yeah, they like, pay the barkeep to leave. No, that's right. They don't pay him to leave. They're like, can you put this in her drink? And he's like, what? Absolutely not. And Dougie's like, do not worry. It is holy water. She's a demon. And the bartender's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then they threaten him and then he does it. And it works. Like, she goes into convulsions and they try to kill her. And she psychically causes Dougie to turn the blade back on himself and he almost kills himself. But the two of them get away, Kay and Dougie. And then they can't agree which direction to run in. So they shake hands and part ways. One goes left, one goes right. Dougie, unfortunately, jumps into a car he thinks is a taxi, and it is, in fact, a demon taxi of some kind, and he is killed. R.I.P. Dougie. Fox Mulder would have loved you. Kay goes the other way. He goes home, and he is in his house trying to figure out what to do when things start getting weird. He shows up on his own television.
Okay.
And it's not clear. At first, it's like, is this like, haha, camera feed? I can see you. I'm threatening you. But then the him on TV starts getting aggressive and not mirroring his movements. So,
hey.
Yeah.
How dare you mirror me?
And he's,
everything like, was good and normal until you started doing that.
And he's like, get the fuck over here, you fucking baby. Kay approaches the television and then he videodromes right inside it. Like, he gets too close and it grabs him and he gets sucked into the TV. And he had like a knife with him, like he was gonna go fight the TV. And he gets sucked in and it rumbles a bit and then it vomits out a bunch of blood in the knife. R.I.P. Kay, I really liked you. You were a really fun and cool character. And I was so sad that he does not make it through. So Joel's allies are dead. He doesn't even know he needs them. Meanwhile, Kay had called Joel's grandmother to be like, I think you need to come get Joel. And she has some psychic dreams. So she comes to New York and is like the only thing that sort of, like, Joel is not going to have sex with this woman because he is too, like, pure about it. It's like, well, we're not married. I can't have sex with you, temptation, no matter what you say. And then his grandma shows up and is like, that's a demon, Joel. You gotta do something. The demon attacks, you know, temptation attacks her, gets demon teeth and demon eyes, and is running around and throwing things, and there's bright lights, and there's blasts of energy. Joel's grandmother keeps saying, like, you know, the answer is in the word, but also you need the works. Like, you, faith without works is dead. Faith without works is nothing. So he grabs a cross and a Bible that this demon had in her house.
No.
For some reason.
Yeah, I just keep the seeds of my own destruction around.
Yeah, I flip it off daily. I'm like, fuck you, God. And he drives her out. He saves his grandmother. He makes a stand against this demon, and it seems like she is dead, and him and his grandma embrace, and he's like, and it was, you know, I did it. I passed my test. I made the right choice at the crossroads. Multiple times he's had, like, psychic dreams about running through a misty alleyway, and as this final voiceover is going, that's what you see again, so I'm doubtful about whether you feel like you've actually done a good job. And they're actually done with your trials and tribulations. But he's like, no, I did it, you know, and I learned the lesson that the word, you know, faith without works is dead. And then we see a limo pull up to a bar. And I think it's Kay driving with demon teeth. And who gets out of the back of the limo but Dougie. And he is the new host for the demon. Like, at the very beginning of the movie, when the first bartender goes to light Temptation's cigarette, he like offers her a lighter and she says, next time use a match, it'll last longer or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when a woman goes to light Dougie's cigarette and he says the exact same thing while looking down the barrel of the camera. So Temptation as a concept is not dead, and we all run the risk. I realized I forgot to describe one scene I really liked, so we have to go back. Sorry.
Nice.
Joel has a nightmare visitation. This is before Kay dies. Has a nightmare visitation in a phantom version of the bar where all the men Temptation has killed are there. And so it's like the bartender, it's the other guy. It is the second guy who she didn't kill, who now has a gunshot wound in his head because his wife realized he cheated on her and killed him for it. And they're all just like hanging out in the bar and they're all going like, join us, come on. That lady's evil, but you should fuck her and join us. And it's a pretty fun, moody scene. Death by Temptation is pretty fun. It's a movie with a small budget, but it is not a movie with, like, no ambitions. It's got some, like, fun lighting setups. And like I said, for most of the movie, it's about Kay, and he's delightful. Joel is played by the writer-director of this movie, and it's the only movie he's ever written and directed. He is okay in this role. Like, Joel is very, like, soft and quiet. And I don't know if the fact that he's, like, not more integrated, like, he's around for the K parts of the movie, and, like, when they're hanging out, they have this nice, easy chemistry. But it is sort of abrupt when suddenly it's like, oh, that other guy is dead. You have to carry the movie now. And, like, I don't know if it's trying to juggle, like, directing and being one of the main actors in it. But it's a pretty good time. Like, I enjoyed it quite a bit. So that's nice. That's Death by Temptation. That's DEF. Seek it out if it's around. But that's it for me.
All right. I already said I did nothing.
That's fair.
Well, I did watch an episode of the 101 Scariest Horror Movie Moments.
Oh, hey!
Another one. There's so many of them.
There are like five, yeah.
There's so many of them, Kelly.
Do you remember which ones were in this one?
Yes. So it was The Conjuring,
mm-hmm.
and Bay of Blood,
mm-hmm.
and a bunch of things, Suspiria.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly I was offended that they put an episode of Twin Peaks The Return on this movie.
Yeah, no moments. Thanks. Got a light.
God damn you, David Lynch.
David
get
Lynch.
Out of my face.
Yeah, we don't like him around here. I mean, I'm sure he's fine, but fuck off. No thank you.
Yeah, it was like the fifth episode, numbers it's like 47 through 35 or something like that.
Getting close to the top.
And yeah, mostly it was like things I'm like, oh yeah, I've seen that, or oh hey, I've never heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess with Suspiria being the noted exception in between. I've heard of that, mm-hmm. and I've never seen that.
Yeah, I keep being like, oh, we should do Suspiria sometime, and I never remember to recommend it. That lady falls in a room of barbed wire or whatever the fuck.
She sure does. They showed that's the scary movie moment. Mm-hmm. And then we could watch the Dakota Johnson one.
Oh, maybe next
Ms.
time we
Webb
do.
Herself.
I fucking wait till we get to Pet Sematary. I wrote a Miss Webb comparison in there.
Maybe
next time we do an original remake, we should do the Suspirias.
Yeah, we do a double feature of Suspirias.
Yeah. People like both of them.
Ooh.
Spooky, scary.
Yeah, there are 8 episodes of that.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. I mean, I watched it immediately or whatever, but it's a lot.
Every time I go and watch another one, I'm like, wait, I've seen so many scary movie moments. How am I only on episode 5? And how are there 3 more after this? I'm not mad at it. I like it. It's just one of those, like, that since I'm slowly going through it, I guess seems more protracted.
Yeah.
It's like, and there were so many in this episode. I'm like, okay, there are 8 of these. This is the 5th one. I know it's 101, but there are like 15 movies that you're going to cover in 50 minutes.
Yeah.
Like 3.5 minutes per movie. It's insane.
Yeah. At some point I'm like, there should maybe be more episodes. You spend a little longer on the movies, but it is, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I just want to love the 90s or whatever.
I mean, that's true. I feel like you also are in the middle period. I feel like is when Joe Latrulio as a talking head disappears, which was a real shame to me. I'm like, he's so enthusiastic. He loves every scary movie. And then he just goes away for like the middle 3 episodes. He comes back, but it's just like, he's having fun. Tell me about Cujo, Joe Latrulio. Come on. Oh, yeah,
this is the one where it's 2 Finchers in a row. It's 7 and Zodiac, neither of which are really horror movies.
Yeah, that, you know what? That does ring a bell.
And then when Tom Savini said he was too scared to finish Zodiac after the Lakeside murder or whatever.
Come on, Tom.
It was too realistic. I couldn't do it. Haven't watched Zodiac to this day.
Tom Savini's got other things to do with his time.
Yeah, don't we all?
We do.
Sorry to the Finch man.
Yeah, sorry, dude. You're fine.
But that's it.
Did you see the clip? I should have retweeted it when I saw it. The clip going around on Twitter. And by going around, I mean, I saw it from one place where someone was like compiling Dave Letterman segments and they stitched together like 6 different segments he had done with Tom Savini in like the 80s.
No.
Where Tom Savini just comes on and is like, here's how you, they like shoot a fake gun at Dave Letterman and they they show him like, you know, animatronics with head wounds. It's like, here's one where it's from the 6th Friday the 13th. He gets a machete in his hand and he like pulls a puppet thing and the hand splits. And it's just Dave Letterman be like, ew, yuck, God.
No, I did not see that going around at all.
I should seek it out and put it on the Twitter because it was very charming. It's just like, yeah, sometimes this is what late night was. Tom Savini shows up, you put white drop cloths down and he goes bang, bang, bang. And a bunch of blood goes everywhere.
Yeah, my main thing with David Letterman is I did not like him at all when he was on TV, which was when I was a child. Like, I still don't know if I was just the wrong audience for this. I don't know if this was meant to be anti-comedy. Was David Letterman the pioneer of anti-comedy? Because I never once saw a top 10 list that was funny.
Yeah, I didn't
see. Is it supposed to be?
I don't know. I don't feel like I saw a lot of him. And he might be one of the early pioneers of anti-comedy. Also, I think it's a very, like, non-kid vibe. Like, he's not attempting to appeal to children at all. No. It's like, it's late night. You're supposed to be asleep. I'm talking to adults.
I guess it's very dry, which I like dry. I've always liked dry. Maybe he's too dry. Like, fucking unbuttered toast.
Do you have a preferred late night host?
I mean, I liked Conan and Craig Ferguson. But I have all of them. Like, I would watch any of them. I would watch Leno. I would watch whatever. But did never like Letterman.
I mean, that's fair. I have such limited interactions with any of them. Because I'm sleepy.
Oh, I'm not sleepy.
I am deeply sleepy, and so
I was even less sleepy back then.
Wow.
I'd be like, hell yeah, late show, lay it on me.
Nope.
What's on after The Daily Show and after Colbert?
That's
what's
like on? Midnight.
What's on?
I have to be up in the morning.
It's Craig Ferguson.
He's hanging out with that skeleton.
I fucking love that skeleton robot.
I mean, the skeleton robot seemed cool.
It was the year 2000.
They are clubs I never attempted to join because I was honk-shoeing.
Fair enough.
Again.
I mean, again, like, it's one of those. Well, what did you do when you all summer when you had 3 months off?
off every year.
I went to sleep.
I don't know, watched daytime TV all day and late night TV all night. What was I supposed to be doing?
Occasionally stay up till about 2 a.m. reading, but other than that, sleepy times.
Put a TV in my room, never see me again. Never see or hear from me again.
That's the thing. So I never had a TV with working TV. The only TV I ever had was, it had like a VCR in it. It was not hooked up to cable. So I could watch tapes, and eventually I got a DVD player. But
no, catch me watching fucking Maury and Jenny Jones and wow. Ricky Lake all day. And then... Leno, Craig Ferguson, all night.
Wow. No, see, Sean and I would tape anime from Adult Swim, and we'd start our day with that in the summers, but we didn't tape all of it, and that wouldn't last you all day anyway. And then it's like, time for video games.
Yeah, catch me watching Cartoon Network, never. Catch games, also never.
You're like, I'm an adult with adult concerns.
No, I just never, that was never the one for me. Mm-hmm. You could catch me watching Nickelodeon or Disney Channel, but Cartoon Network was literally in between them on our cable package, and I would be like, fuck you.
Wow, why? Do you know why?
I just never got, I think it's partially the animation style. Uh-huh. I was too consumed by Nick that it was like the competitor and I wasn't interested. And then Disney Channel was like the new kid on the block. So I'm like, okay, I can get into that because I never had it before. But just, I've never watched anything on Cartoon Network ever.
What shows did you watch on Nick?
All of them. I don't know. Otto Monsters, Angry Beavers, Rugrats, Doug, all the SNICK show, like everything. Okay. Just whatever was on Nickelodeon, I would watch.
I always got disappointed when they're like, now for a live action show. And I'm like, that is not what I'm here for.
I was into the live action shows. Love Alex Mack, Pete and Pete, Hey Dude. What was the camp
Salute
one?
Your Shorts. Salute Your Shorts. I mean, I watched some of it. I liked the game shows.
Yeah, watched all the game shows.
Obviously. Who didn't like the game shows?
I mean, we should definitely be talking about how much we love 90s Nickelodeon.
Well, it's that or talk about the Pet Sematary movie.
Right now, in this moment, specifically, in the zeitgeist.
Right.
But,
sorry.
I mean, I brought it up, and I love Nickelodeon, and well, it's one of those. Now it's my problematic fave, apparently. But
I have not watched the documentary. No. Yeah, but I did watch all that, so you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm complicit. I'm
you
sorry.
Were a child.
I know, I'm not really complicit. And it's, you know, I will love them in my heart and we never have to revisit them or give them any money or whatever ever again.
No.
Keep the slime geyser closed, apparently.
I do miss the slime fountain.
I did think as I was watching Sonic 2 this weekend, are they going to change their minds about watching Sonic 2 for the Flophouse now? And then I'll be mad. But I don't think they will.
Oh. Was that part of it?
Not that movie, but like James Marsden is like soft canceled for writing a letter in support of that guy, of Brian Peck.
Oh.
Those guys.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, what a fucking tangled web we weave.
So do you want to talk about real world horrors or do you want to talk about Pet Sematary?
Pet Sematary 2019 it is.
All right, here we go.
Hey guys, do you know Pet Sematary?
Yeah, have you seen the 1989?
Like 89, yeah.
Pet Sematary, it's been 30 years.
Should we do that again?
Let's like beat for beat do that again
with a couple large differences but mostly the same. I told mom we were doing this, she's like, didn't you do that already? And I'm like, no, we did the first one.
Yeah, we did. It'll be very similar, but yeah, like beat for beat to the point where it's like, oh yeah, this happened in the original Pet Sematary. Like obviously if you're thinking like big picture Pet Sematary, you've got it. And then you're watching this movie and we're like, we're not just doing big picture Pet Sematary. We're doing details. We're doing kid hit by a car on the first day of work. We're doing, I don't know, but like, no, stupid little things like that. We're doing dirty feet in the bed. We're doing,
he should have fucking rolled out of bed beat. And hit his head on the side table. Like, no, this movie is counting on you to have seen it, because that's the only thing that makes its one big twist, like, work.
Yes.
Like, it is trying to fake you out by being so close to movie.
You got me. You inverted my expectations now momentarily a couple times. Now what?
And they don't have, the problem with this movie is they don't have an answer. It feels like all the energy went into, and then this happens instead of this. And it's like, well, what are the ramifications of that? And they're like, nothing.
Nothing. And we never said spinal meningitis.
And we never said the name of the tribe. No. We never said the Mi'kmaq. We're trying not to offend people.
We're woke. But anyway, the Pet Sematary begins with a slow pan over the trees and the woods and the road, and then something's on fire, and then you're like, oh, I get it, we're beginning at the end, I guess.
Yep.
All right, got like some dirty footprints going into a
blood house,
fucked up house.
Yeah,
somebody's house on fire. Anyway, go back to the beginning.
There should have been rewinding noises.
That was a pretty good off the cuff.
It was.
Always, I surprised myself.
Yeah, it was good.
Cause yeah, now we have to drive up to our new home in Maine.
Yeah,
in
the Ludlow, Creeds. Maine.
It's a very, it reminded me of The Lodge. They're driving up. Aren't they driving up to the lodge at the beginning of the lodge? I think
probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Family driving, new home. The Creeds, Lewis and Rachel, the parents, Ellie and Gage, the children,
Church, the cat.
The cat.
There's a very weird moment where Gage is like banging on Church's pet carrier because Gage is still two.
Yep.
And it's just like banging with a plastic truck on there. And Ellie's like, can you get him to stop? He's bothering the cat. And they're both like, eh, who cares?
Nah.
It's like, I mean, that would be bothering the cat, probably.
We're almost there. Let him bother the cat.
All right.
Yeah. It's, they pull up to their new home. It's a big, like, farmhouse, red barn.
Yep. Big barn.
House. And, it's set back from the road with like trees and stuff between it and the road. But don't worry, it is on Murder Truck Row.
Truck go vroom.
One, of course, blasts past them right as they're like getting excited about house.
Yeah. They need to build a fence.
Yeah. That saved them at least one dead kid.
Yeah. Later, when they, like, look sideways and you see Judd's house, there's a fence between their house and Judd's house.
Well, stay out, Judd. Come in, murder trucks.
It's like, who? Okay. Yes. It is Murder Truck Road. And the first day we're here, there's a be-masked procession of children.
Yeah. It's fine. If you weren't upset by the speeding truck, maybe kids in your next masks wheelbarrowing a dead dog through your backyard, banging on drums and staring at you balefully, that might put you off of the house.
Yeah, these folk horror children technically trespassing.
yeah. I mean, like, it's they're moving here from Boston because they need a slower lifestyle. Like, dad is an ER physician who's burnt out on the ER, so now he's gonna work on this campus clinic. But I feel like none of that is the type of, like, we need to move across the country like now that would cause us to buy a place sight unseen with a pet cemetery and 50 acres of cursed land attached to it,
and the, like, place all no trucks urgency. Legally have to go.
for them to do. Like, and they're not moving from Chicago to Maine this time. They're moving from Boston to Maine. You could drive that in less than a day. Rachel does drive that in heavy traffic back later in the movie. Why did you move here without seeing it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a real,
I
want
to see
choice.
The realtor walk through. Like, beautiful barn, you know, fittings, 5 bedrooms, finished attic, finished basement, pet cemetery, deadfall. Oh, ignore those little children and masks.
It comes with built-in friends for your kids. Yeah. They're already here all the time because pets can't stop dying in Ludlow, Maine.
So many bones. Bones free. With purchase.
Yeah, we can fit so many bones in this bad boy, and they just pad the swamp.
But yeah, so Rachel and Ellie run into this procession of children. Rachel, you know, urges Ellie back to the house, but SpongeBob SquarePants will not hold her attention. She must wander back to the cemetery. And attempt to climb the deadfall.
Yeah. Which is big. It's a tree wall. Never once have I looked at a wall and been like, I'm going to climb that for fun.
I mean, like, if you're a kid and you're just climbing stuff for fun, maybe, like, exploring, whatever. But, yeah, she's like, I'm going to climb this wall. And then she falls and apparently gets stung by a bee. That's what we're worried about.
Yeah, like, so Judd shows up and is like, get down from there. And she falls and manages to kick a really big hive, it looks like. And one bee comes out and stings her. And then he's like, let me put dirt on that.
Yeah, let me spit on that for you.
Yeah. Judd is played by John Lithgow.
Yes.
Looking deeply sun damaged. So congrats to the makeup artist on this one.
Yeah. No Maine accent.
No, not really.
Not really.
Certainly nothing compared to original Judd.
No.
But yeah, he looks like he's gotten so many bad years of sun. I was like, wow, this is impressive. Unless John Lithgow's just not been taking care of himself.
No, he's been sitting on his porch watching people not go into the pet cemetery. Or do go into the pet cemetery, as the case may be. Judd, you're so bad at your job of keeping people out of the pet cemetery.
He's really not good. Also, he feels like barely a character in this.
No, he's really not.
Which is a weird choice to me.
Yeah, it is, and especially with, like, the ending and, like, whatever.
Yeah.
We never once cared about your wife. Why is she here stabbing you now?
Oh, my. We'll get there. What the fuck?
But yes, Judd talks to Ellie about his dead dog, who is buried in the non-cursed part of the pet cemetery. And that leads Ellie to later that night asking her parents about, like, why do pets have to die? And her dad giving her a very scientific metabolism-based explanation.
Small animals don't live as long as people.
And then, like, the parents later getting into a disagreement about how that discussion went, because
Rachel jumps in to say, and she's like, what Daddy's trying to say is that their souls keep living. I'm like, that is not what Daddy's trying to say. That is
not at all.
At all.
It was like, eventually, all living things are batteries, and eventually they all run out of juice.
Yeah, he's like, eventually, you know, everybody dies, and we all go back into the earth, and it's fine. And she's like, what he means is heaven is real.
Yeah. And then... Very funnily, after, you know, they put the kids to bed and they're getting ready for bed and stuff, they look at each other and are both basically like, what the fuck was that? Like, I was gonna ask you, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. And they have this weird conversation where she's just like, so you don't think an afterlife is possible at all? And I'm like, why haven't you guys talked about this before? Your child's almost 9. Like,
yeah, you... Yeah, how did you avoid this far, first of all? And,
I mean, go ahead.
I mean, you gotta come up with an answer. You gotta have a united front on that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what happens is it turns out this lady's ready to freak out anytime death comes up because of her sister trauma.
Yeah.
So, like, this conversation has her, like, twitching in their bedroom about her dead sister. But Yeah, I feel like just in casual conversation in the at least decade you two have known each other, I'm sure, I feel like it would have come up.
Yeah, even if you're not like preparing an answer to give your child,
yeah.
I feel like that's something you would know about your life partner.
Yeah, like the first time you guys go to a funeral together, and it's just like, well.
Like, a word, you're an atheist?
Yeah. Shit. Oh, you're not? Oh, weird. Well, okay.
But yes, Rachel's sister had some kind of disease that kept her in bed.
She was sick.
She was sick, and she had a twisted up, fucked up back. Don't say why.
Nope.
But yeah, flashback to like how she had to care for her sister as a child and has trauma because of it. And later things that we'll find out in a different flashback.
Oh my gosh, the later things. Yeah. We're laying the groundwork for that later flashback. It's like day two of work, and poor Victor Pascal is mown down by a car.
Yeah, fuck. This guy, he's really fucked up. Like, his face is fucked up, and his shoulders are fucked
up. His brain is pulsing.
Yeah, his brain. People can see his brain.
There's a nurse named Kelly who does a bad job.
All of his blood comes out.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, can't save this kid. Weren't equipped. Not an ER, but couldn't do shit for him.
Right.
R.I.P. And, like, pretty much after he dies and Lewis stops, you know, CPR.
His Madam Web-like CPR.
Again, minimal... Minimal CPR
just efforts. You know, kind of push. I mean, maybe real CPR is not done with any urgency and I'm wrong, but it doesn't feel right, let me tell you.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. But yes, once declared dead, supernatural shit starts happening. The lights flicker in the clinic. And then the corpse sits up and says Lewis's name, tells him that the barrier was not meant to be broken, and then he's dead again.
Yep.
R.I.P. Victor Pascal.
This guy also is barely here, it feels like. Like, he shows up a couple times, but it's like, wow. There's no oomph in this movie. It's just, like, little paper guys wandering around.
Yeah. Yeah, because shortly after that, we see Lewis just dissociating in his car.
He almost gets fucking killed by a truck himself.
Yeah, just sitting at a flashing red light. Decides to go whenever. It was the wrong moment.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And then he goes and he tells his wife about it. And he's like, he knew my name. But she doesn't hear him. And she's just like, nah, never mind.
She goes, what? And he's like, you know what? After our argument last night about how the afterlife maybe doesn't exist, I can't tell you a ghost knew my name. Really undermining my own position.
But Ellie goes to poke around in Judd's house.
Just lets herself into his house.
Yeah.
Hey, Ellie, what the hell?
I crossed the murder road all by myself. Is that your wife? Is that your gun?
Is that your gun? Yeah. He does accuse her of poking around in his things. Judd, I think that drawer was open, but she should not be in your house. It's true.
Yeah, she shouldn't even be in here. Anyway, come meet my cat. Come stay for dinner. Come be part of our family, Judd. Mm-hmm. Come tell us about our house, Judd. Oh, we have 50 acres? How far back does it go? Oh, further than you'd want to go. Okay, cool.
Sounds judgmental, Judd. What the hell?
Sounds like a liability problem, Judd. Are we insured for all that?
Yeah, what
Are
happens
you also if... also our insurance agent?
What happens if one of those kids falls down or whatever in the pet cemetery?
It's a liability problem. Definitely.
Do you think we can put in a pool?
No. I think if you do, a poltergeist will happen.
Oh, that'd be a funny way to remake Pet Sematary. Like, none of that other stuff happens, but poltergeist happens to them.
Just animal bones.
Yeah. Ooh, they're dancing.
Your unfinished swimming pool.
It's a rainy night and all the cat skeletons come out.
But yeah, then Lewis goes a night wandering.
Yeah. Ghost comes to his house.
Yeah, Pascal. Mystery door leads to mystery woods. And it leads to the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Leads to Pascal, like, whispering to him and then telling him the ground is sour, like, jumping out of the dead.
Yeah, Pascal jump scares him for some reason. I don't know if this is going to help your case, Victor.
It's like, you tried to help me, so let me help you. The ground is sour! Oh my god.
It's like, I tried slightly more direct methods of helping you, even if they didn't work, so can you do me the same solid?
Yeah, and then he wakes up with dirty feet in the morning. Oh my gosh, that was real. Oh no.
Doesn't talk to anyone about it.
No. Just put the covers back.
Doesn't seem to think about it that much either.
No. Maybe he's always sleepwalked.
Maybe.
But then it's Halloween, and I am no expert on weather mm-hmm. and Maine, mm-hmm. but it seems like it should be colder on Halloween.
Probably.
But don't worry about that. Church died.
Yeah. Wait. Yay.
R.I.P.
Yep.
Judd comes, like, gestures Lewis.
Yeah, Judd's just, like, haunting the bottom of their driveway. And Lewis is like, are you here to scare the children, Judd?
It's like, no, I'm here to scare you.
I'm here to point at your dead cat.
I'm here to fuck up your afternoon. Your cat's dead.
We'll deal with it later. All Hallows Eve, the witching hour. It'll be fine.
We have to go trick-or-treat on Truck Murder Road.
I think they were getting in a car to go somewhere, yeah, at least. What if we all got hit by a truck on Halloween?
You stay here and watch this cat body. We'll come back and deal with it later. So, yeah, we see cut to after trick-or-treating, but before burying a cat.
Yeah.
Another somber parental conversation about how they're going to tell Ellie about this.
Yeah. Lewis is like, we got to tell her cat is dead. And the mom's like, no, tell her he ran away.
Yeah, the mom is super upset and, like, shaking and fidgeting and whatnot again.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, okay, we'll tell her that he ran away. But first, the second part of that flashback, which is, again, mom was left alone at home to take care of her sick sister. She was supposed to bring her sister food. She didn't like going to bring her sister food and going into the room with her sister. So she would use the dumbwaiter that they, of course, had in their normal Boston house. But she wasn't supposed to use the dumbwaiter because the dumbwaiter didn't always work properly. But she did. And she sent the food up in the dumbwaiter. And then she heard, like, clang clanging. And then the dumbwaiter fell. And you're like, oh no. But it's just food in there, right? It's just, like,
in there, oatmeal, yeah.
Oatmeal slopped all over mm-hmm. the place. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to have to clean it. But second, oh no. Here comes your sister Zelda's body. Falling down, also the dumbwaiter, dead. You killed her.
How did this accident happen?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. Because this sister is supposedly not able to get out of bed.
Yeah.
So it's like she gets up and walks over to get her food out of the dumbwaiter, and then the dumbwaiter falls. And
the dumbwaiter, like, Tower of Terrors. And she's
leaning forward to get it, and she loses her balance and falls on top of the dumbwaiter. Like, that's the only way it could have happened, and that's impossible.
Yeah. It's a fuck. It's so weird. This is
I was lazy and I killed her. It's like, no, like, you've ghosted your house or something because somebody threw your sister down a dumbwaiter and you were not up there to do it. So it wasn't you.
Yeah. Yeah. At this point, I paused the movie to be like, well, she didn't fall down a dumbwaiter in the original or in the book. What happened? And it's like, oh, in the original, she choked. Which I feel like makes a lot more sense for a sick, bedridden person being looked after by a 6-year-old.
Yeah. You don't just fall down a dumbwaiter. That's not how anyone dies.
She watched,
let alone someone who can't, who's not ambulatory.
She watched it fall, taking the delicious oatmeal with it, and went, "I'm gonna go get that," and threw herself down the dumbwaiter.
I no longer wish to live without my slop.
I can't walk down the stairs.
I must follow it down.
And then Rachel's like, and then I just imagined I heard her in the walls all the time.
Because our house was already haunted.
Yeah, your house was already fucked. Your parents have a lot to answer for.
They're also not characters. They're not even going to try and fight someone at a funeral.
I missed that scene.
I did too. They're just going to kind of glare.
Yeah. They're going to exist near a car. I mean, the parents in this story, her parents always have a lot to answer for, but it feels like extra here. Like, yeah. If you know the dumbwaiter doesn't work, lock those doors. Turn it off.
Yeah, and also, like, age-wise, this is the 90s.
True.
This happened in. Yeah, crazy. Anyway, let's go bury that cat. Everything's gonna be normal, and we're gonna bury my daughter's cat, right, Judd? You picked out a nice spot for us in the normal cemetery part.
No marker, though, because my daughter can read, and she can never know that her cat is dead.
Cat can't be buried here. He ran away.
Must be a different church.
Yeah.
But the woods whisper to Judd, and he's like, take that shovel, let's climb this tree wall.
Yeah, he's like, you love your daughter, Lewis?
Oh, and God, he's going to kill me out here.
Of course I do. Well, come with me.
What?
And so he's like, all right. I mean, he is like, what am I doing? But he does follow him over the tree wall and through the swamp. And up the scary stairs.
Oh, through the screensaver?
Yeah, through that room in the hidden temple, where all the temple guards always are.
Yeah, do not put your hand in the tree. Just bust through the wall. We've been over this before, but it remains true.
Then up the scary stairs to the soundstage on the top of the mountain.
Yep.
And now dig.
Yeah. And he's like, I'd help you. But you gotta do it yourself. And then in a detail I found hilarious, he lights a cigarette, which later he just throws the butt on the ground. I'm like, you're littering on this evil earth. No wonder it's mad at you.
Here's some litter, Wendigo. Yeah, that's done. It's fine. We still have to tell Ellie that her cat ran away. She's still gonna be super sad. Except she's not, because she knows you're full of shit. Not because she knows Church is dead, but because she knows he's not gone. Mm-hmm. He's just over there. He's in the closet right now.
He's being sinister, but he's here.
He's being sinister E.T. In the closet. And yeah, Dad, like, goes over. It's definitely the same cat. Like, it has the collar. It has everything, so...
It has the blood all over it.
And so he immediately goes over to Judd's.
Yeah, there is a line I like in here where Rachel's like, good thing you're not a fucking vet.
Yeah.
That did make me laugh. But yeah, he's like, hey, Judd.
What the hell?
What? Hey, last night I said, what did we just do? And you said, bury my cat. And this morning, the cat's not dead?
Yeah. And Judd's like, yeah, I mean, nobody really understands it. So it's fine. Anyway, enjoy your cat. There's something
science will never explain.
Yeah. Enjoy your cat. Enjoy your daughter. No one's traumatized. You're welcome.
He does preface this by saying, well, Lewis, there are some places that are older than you and I. And I'm like, hey, Judd, most places are older.
Yeah, all places.
Like, there's maybe a Chuck E. Cheese on this earth that is younger than me. But, like, just sort of areas of woods, they're older than me. But I like a lot. This cat is sitting on cutting boards, and this is not acceptable. Alive or dead, get the fuck out of my kitchen.
Never. So yeah, he like sort of tells him, like, stuff comes back to life. Nobody knows. And so Judd does some Googling, reads some old local news stories.
Yeah, Lewis, instead of speaking to anyone, just Googles things.
Yeah. And it's like, a bull came back to life. A Vietnam soldier came back to life.
Someone lugged a bull up there, Rose. And then it made its way home. Do you have any interest in someone reanimated a Vietnam soldier? Well, I recommend Pet Cemetery Bloodlines, which is a prequel film about that very moment. Yeah. It has two hospital pies in it.
It does have two
hospital pies. And it's the only notable thing about it.
It also has that swamp.
It does have that swamp. Fewer bones, I think.
But, yeah. So, that's weird. I'll still not talk about this.
Yeah. Kids have always worn your next masks in this town, which is just, like, a different issue.
Yeah. They're just little creeps. That has nothing to do with nothing.
No. Kids are creeps all over, Lewis. Come on.
But in the meantime, Ellie is trying to groom Church up, get all that matted blood and viscera out of his alive fur. And he objects to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he swats her and she gets scratched. And mm-hmm. she doesn't like Church anymore or the house anymore or anything anymore. She's like, I want to go back to our old house and I don't want Church in my room at night. Good night.
Good night. Sleep well.
Anyway, Church is gonna come into your room. Mm-hmm. Church does not want mom and dad to fuck.
Nope.
He wants to bring you a dead bird. A not quite dead bird.
Yeah.
It's hard to fuck when a zombie cat is bringing you a not quite dead bird.
Like, it's not impossible, but the Creeds are not up to it.
No. They're barely up to it on a good day.
On normal circumstances.
Yeah, they're just so upset all the time about, like, not much
right.
has happened right. yet.
Yeah, again.
He's like, we could turn this around. I'm like, what's happened?
You have faced the mildest problems. Also, if you guys just had an indoor cat, none of this would have happened. You used to live in Boston. Was Church an outdoor cat in Boston?
We all came here for a better life, including Church. So you could go get killed by a truck.
He was so sick of living in our apartment.
Or kill a bird.
I mean, this criticism stands for the original, were you an outdoor cat in Chicago? I don't think so.
No. That's why he gets fucking road killed.
Yeah.
Both times.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, they're freaking out because the bird's alive and Church is here. And they're running around trying to, like, find the bird, find the cat. And Mom runs into a phantom dumbwaiter in their house.
Yeah, what if your medicine cabinet was a dumbwaiter?
That would be bad.
It'd be scary.
If you have dumbwaiter-related trauma.
Yeah. Few of us do, but it does happen.
And they're like, it's okay, it's fine, we can turn this around, let's have a party. Let's throw Ellie a birthday party, and let's invite our friends from Boston, and we'll not regret that we moved here at all.
Yeah, sure.
In the meantime, also, Church is, like, sitting on Gage in his crib.
Yes.
Sinisterly.
Yeah.
Also, this child is way too old and way too big for this crib.
Yes. Yeah.
That's problem number one.
He should be graduating to a race car bed any day now.
A race truck bed.
We cannot encourage murder truck road. It's gonna be a car. Maybe like a slow wagon bed. He also drew a scary picture.
Oh yeah.
With a blood head.
Some kind of blood head.
Some kind of Victor. Pascal.
He's shining.
Yeah, just a little. After Gage gets menaced by this cat, Lewis goes over and is like, hey, Judd, my cat's a murderer.
Yeah. It's like, more lore, please, Judd. Tell me more.
Judd's like, I don't know, you Googled earlier. You can't Google now.
It's like, no, I need one of your many books about Native American history, Judd. Show me a picture of a Wendigo, please.
Which is not even, like, what this is, so. Also, Judd's like, it might be crazy folklore, or it might not. It's like, okay, Judd.
But anyway, the local tribes didn't want to live here anymore because it was too evil.
Because it sucked.
It was, the ground was sour, you might say. Mm-hmm. And they built a fucking wall around it to keep people from going back there before fucking off forever. But it didn't work.
Yeah, you can climb that wall. I climbed that wall.
Yeah, I fucking buried my dead dog over there. Mm-hmm. And then it came back and it attacked my mother. And then it had to be put down again. But I thought your cat would be fine.
Yeah, my dog always kind of sucked.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. A nice cat, a nice little girl's cat, couldn't possibly do anything wrong. Church innocent.
Yeah. And then he also is like, also, by the way, the evil earth does trick you into going back there and you'll convince yourself to go, which I realize now is probably what happened with your cat.
Yeah.
So we should not do that.
Such sweet excuses. I just wanted your daughter to be happy and the fucking pet cemetery got me. Got what it wanted.
Yeah. A pet. Yeah. So probably kill your cat.
It's definitely evil. Definitely evil, and you should definitely redo the job. Put it down. And so Lewis does. He goes to euthanize Church, and Church fights him back. Mm-hmm. But then he, like, can't do it.
Yeah, Church pulls the oldest trick in the book, which is sad big eyes. Which is always a trick, Lewis. Haven't you ever seen a horror movie? And so Lewis instead is like, I'm going to abandon you in the woods.
Have a fun new life, Church.
Yeah.
You came here for a better life. Here's your life in the woods, Church.
Go kill so many birds, Church, you undead menace.
Yeah, and Church sits there under the fence and stares at him as he drives away. And it's party time.
Party time!
That birthday party we talked about, it's here!
Hooray!
It's Ellie's 9th birthday. They have a cake. They play some Blind Man's Bluff. But first, Ellie's feeling melancholy about Church running away for real this time. Because mm-hmm. She kicked him out of her room. And she's like, he thought I didn't like him anymore. And I'm sad that he's gone. And Lewis and his infinite dad wisdom is like, here's a fucking stuffed angel cat.
This angel cat is better such now. A choice.
It's horrible. That's the worst gift ever.
Don't worry, your cat's not dead. Have an angel cat that makes noise and I didn't buy out of guilt.
For a 9-year-old.
Because I know you love angels and cats.
Yeah, horrible. Horrible choices. But it works. It works. Great. She's thrilled. I love it. This is better than my real cat. Thanks, Dad.
It can't walk. It'll never leave me.
Yeah, it can never get hit by a car. Or can it?
Uh-oh. Only if you make it happen, Ellie.
They're having the party. Their dad is now blindfolded and chasing children around the front yard of Murder Truck Road. Gage is, like, run and hidden behind some cars.
Gage should not be playing this game.
No one should be playing this game in the front yard of 402 Murder Truck Road, but definitely not Gage. Definitely not the 2-year-old.
They have so much side yard. Just move it over there.
But more importantly, Church is coming up the road. He's back. And Ellie sees Church and runs out to meet Church. And it's like fucking sitting in the middle of the road talking to her cat. And Gage is headed that way too because he sees Ellie and he sees Church. And that's all exciting stuff for a 2-year-old. And then a murder truck is coming. Mm-hmm. And you think it's gonna get them, get little Gagey Gage, but they... Parents are able to run out. Dad runs out at the last minute, snatches him out of the road. The truck swerves wildly. like flips over, detaches the tanker, mm-hmm. and that tanker fucking greases.
Bop. Bop. She gets flung. There's no blood. Like, we get the slow-mo, oh no, our child is dead scene, but like, it's a white tanker truck and the road and her body, and there's not any blood anywhere. And I'm like, you cowards.
No. Yeah, just like hit her like a baseball bat hits a ball, and she was flung into the like weeds on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And you just see her partially obscured body and parents crying and screaming at the sky.
Yeah. Soul just got knocked right out of there.
You got me, movie. I was so excited to see a toddler get greased, and you greased a 9-year-old instead.
Yep. Different.
Like, the truth is, they never would have gotten as good of a toddler actor as original Gage.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I know that they made this choice. I have not investigated why, and part of it is... probably it's like, well, you're not going to get as good as Miko Hughes, that amazing little gremlin. But also it's like, does it have to do with like child labor stuff? Like, can children that small work even less than regular children who already are curtailed for good reasons, obviously? It's just like, you're just like, oh, it'll be easier to direct yeah. a 9 to 11-year-old child than a toddler.
Yeah, I mean, they never were going to find a match for original Gage. Though this kid is a good, like, looks match. Like,
yeah.
He looks just like original Gage.
Yeah.
And
I think he handles what he is asked to do just fine, which is mostly be child.
Yeah, like, lean against things and sometimes say gay, or sometimes say Ellie, or church.
Yeah, be cute. He's got it.
Yeah. But yeah, dead. Time for a funeral. Time for no funeral fight. No corpse falling on the ground. Just bunch of people glowering.
Yeah.
And then Judd and Lewis making uncomfortable eye contact across a coffin. And then Rachel deciding that she does not want to, can't, won't stay here any longer, and taking Gage to stay with her parents in Boston.
Bye.
So, you know, that night, it's time to fucking get ripped and dig up your kid.
Time to drug your neighbor.
Yeah.
Which...
yes, because Lewis goes across the street to Judd. Judd's sitting out, like, tending a campfire in his yard, keeping watch as he does, and brings over a bottle, and some glasses, and they... toast to dead Ellie. Judd tries to talk him out of it. He's like, you don't do what you think you want to do, right? Like, I never should have showed you that place. It was my mistake. You wouldn't even have this in your mind if I never showed you.
Remember how you had to abandon that cat in the woods and then it came back and killed your kid anyway? Yeah.
And Lewis is like, well, if you shouldn't have showed me, then you wouldn't have showed me. So, get roofied. I'm night, going night. To dig up my kid.
He puts like a jacket on him or something, which is like, I guess don't freeze to death out here, Judd.
It is, I guess, November at least in Maine.
Yeah, he should be fucking Jack Nicholson at the end of The Shining out here. The ghost like tries to stop him again, I think. Doesn't work.
No, yeah, he's like, don't do it.
He sees
and Rachel tries to call and Rachel does call and asks him to come, like, come to Boston, like, just come now. It was a mistake to leave you up there. And he's like, I can't. I'm so sleepy. I'm definitely not gonna dig up our kid.
I'm not doing it right now.
Yeah. And also, Rachel's fucking parents still live in the same fucking house where their daughter died in a dumbwaiter. And Rachel's sitting there staring at it right now while calling you. Good place to go when you're bereaved.
Yeah, I didn't think about the house I was fleeing to.
Yeah.
I'm going to a hotel.
I went from one bad house to another. Second one, arguably worse.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't the house's fault.
No.
In Maine.
No. It was the road's fault.
But yeah, when Lewis is digging up Ellie, the ghost does say, like, he's like, I'm sorry. I tried to stop you, but I'm not good at it. Because all I do is stand here.
Yeah, Lewis should be like, I don't even remember your fucking name. Good day, sir.
And then he, like, also, the ghost pops up in Boston, mm-hmm. and Gage can see him, and Mom's freaking out. And, like, later she says he was saying the name. I'm like, was he? Can I just not hear? Was he saying Pascal?
Sort of.
Yeah.
He's got a little baby mouth.
Yeah. But anyway, carry that dead kid through the woods.
Yeah, make her walk back, as they always do.
Maybe see a wendigo somewhere behind some mist.
Mm-hmm, not important.
Dig a very shallow grave. But in retrospect, it's like, if you know what it's for, like, yeah. You're not gonna dig it deep. He says sorry to her as he covers her face in dirt and then leaves.
Yeah. Find your own way back, kid.
Yeah. Like, it's probably part of the, should be a sign that they're, like, evil and cursed, that they are able to find their way back home, mm-hmm. from being buried up there. But, no, it's fine. Wake up to muddy footprints on the floor. Oh my gosh, it worked! My Christmas wish came true! My dead daughter is back, my little girl! And Ellie is... She's not great.
No, she's pretty gray.
Yeah, she's pretty gray. One of her eyes is fucked up. She's pretty flat affect. Mm-hmm. Like, what happened? Like, well, you don't actually have to tell me. I know what happened. Yeah, I remember.
She remembers dying and knows she's dead.
But yeah, he gives her a bath. He's disturbed by the staples in the back of her head.
And, like, the fact that her hair is coming out.
She's dead.
Yeah, she got bopped to death.
She got put back together pretty well, considering she was, you know, flung across the highway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she knows she's dead. It's not great. But I guess they make it through the whole day. He, like, puts her to bed. Good night, sweetheart. Wakes up in the morning. She's up. She's doing ballet.
She's doing sinister ballet.
How lovely. It's just like she's back. Remember when she did ballet for us and Judd and we all loved it? And then we buried her in her ballet costume and now she put it back on and it's all dirty, nasty, and gross.
And now she's, like, throwing things.
Yeah, now she's breaking stuff and now I'm screaming at her to stop. And then she's rightfully getting pissed at me because she didn't get brought back from the dead to get screamed at.
Right.
Fuck you, Ted.
I thought you wanted me here, jerk.
It's like, you're not allowed. You're not allowed to snap like that fast at me, who is dead.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Rachel's already on her way back. She's like, F this. I'm in traffic. I'm coming to Maine.
I'm 20 miles from Derry. I wonder if this traffic has to do with that evil clown that we all know lives here.
Maybe.
She calls Judd. She's been calling Lewis and he hasn't answered.
Yeah.
So she calls Judd and is like, please go check on Lewis. And so he does. And Lewis won't let him inside and is being weird at the door.
Yeah. And you can see the dirt under his fingernails. Mm-hmm. And Judge just like, Lewis, if you did something, it's not too late to undo it. Like, we'll all close our eyes and stab your undead kid. And when we open them, it'll be like nothing ever happened.
Yep.
And Lewis is just like, no, nothing. Everything's normal over here. Just paperwork so I could go meet my family in Boston. I'm waiting for an important call from Rachel. She hasn't called yet. So... Bye, Judd.
There is a moment in this conversation, and it is not important, but it did strike me, because Lewis is inside his house, and he goes, well, I gotta go back inside. I'll talk to you later. And I'm like, did he used to come all the way outside? No. Just say bye.
Just bye. Shut the door.
And Judd's like, I must prepare for child siege. And he, like, goes home and locks all his lockables.
Yeah, he gets his gun from the drawer. He sees Ellie in, like, the upstairs window and goes to get his gun. And then he hears a thump from upstairs and goes up and is like, where's this fucking child? And I'm like, not here, Judd. She's dead, but she can't teleport. How would she have gotten upstairs? But he goes, pokes around. We do see back over in the Creed house, Ellie open up a glass box with a scalpel in it.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, Judd's poking around. Stuff's broken upstairs. We get a million fake outs of his Achilles is gonna get sliced by a scalpel.
Yeah,
he kicks the bed instead and no one's under there. He's going back downstairs and looks back upstairs and it's church is up there, and then he gets fucking ankle scalpeled.
Yeah, and it's like
so
a pretty, it's not just like a cut across the back of his ankle, it's like stick it in and then pull it out, like a chunk practically comes off.
It's deep.
Yeah, he falls down the stairs.
Yeah. It's somebody in one of the creepy child masks being like, it's Ellie. She's like, I saw Norma. I saw your wife. You know how you loved your wife? I saw her in hell.
For what you did to her? Which I don't know what this means.
Yeah, I don't know if it's supposedly implying that Judd brought Norma back.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's what it is.
I get it is. But, I mean, we don't get any explanation. We just get that line. I'm like, what does that mean?
But then she flips the mask up and it's Norma under there. And she's like, you brought this suffering by telling Lewis about the cemetery. So now you suffer with us. And the cat giggles and stabs him 1,000 times.
His last words to her, because he's like, you're not my wife, this and that, and she keeps taunting him, and he says, common fucking trollop, and then gets stabbed a million times.
Yeah, did you just call this child slash your wife a common fucking trollop, Judd?
I'm like, we need more info about Judd and his wife for any of this scene to make sense, because I don't know what's happening.
Maybe you should get stabbed 1,000 times.
Yeah. It's like, I guess the relationship was bad. I don't know. This doesn't point in a positive direction.
But anyway, R.I.P. Judd.
We barely knew ye.
We really didn't know shit about you, Judd. Rachel's back.
Yep.
She made it through the traffic. She immediately knows something's wrong also.
And Lewis is like, wait, let me tell you the plot of Pet Sematary.
Yeah, he's trying to explain and she's just like, no, this is fucked up. He's like, I wasn't ready to say goodbye. There's this place, there's Wendigos, the ground, the thing.
And the cat and came back.
Yeah. And then Ellie is there and she's like, oh, aren't you happy to see me, mommy? And she's like, no.
No, scary. No.
And, like, Ellie comes up and hugs her, and she won't hug her
back. Lewis is like, hug your daughter.
Hug your daughter.
You hug her, Lewis. I ain't seen that. You're just pulling her hair out and yelling at her.
Yeah. And so Rachel runs upstairs with Gage. Upstairs with Gage. Always a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Lewis looks at Ellie like, sorry about your mom. And Ellie's just like, yeah, it's fine. I don't want her here either. Sinister child. Sinister child affect. But, like, Lewis goes up and he tries to explain, like, the whole thing again. Like, no, you don't get it. Like, the ground.
So there's a pet cemetery.
It's like, I don't care how it happened. I just wish it hadn't happened. And then he mirrors, like, she's like, it's not right. She was dead. She, you know, that's not our daughter. And Lewis mirrors the line from the original Pet Sematary, let God take his own fucking kid. Now you believe in God. Now that fucking zombie children exist. But Ellie is on the loose. Nobody knows where she went. Mom and Gage are barricaded up in the room upstairs. Gage is also too big for this playpen. Mm-hmm. Like, get some age-appropriate things for your child. And Rachel starts having another, well, hallucination. Yeah,
this is like a ghost attack.
Cause yeah,
it's another, like, it's sort of a flashback, except she is now like her sister. Like, she is sick. And yeah. In bed, but also her sister is here in the dumbwaiter.
Yeah, and then back in reality, Ellie fucking like flings herself out from under the bed and jumps on her mom, like on top of the bed. She has mm-hmm. a knife, by yeah. the way. She had gotten a butcher knife out of the
sure.
the kitchen and tries to stab her mom. And Rachel's able to like shove her back out the door mm-hmm. and like shove some stuff in front of the door,
but not enough stuff.
Lewis has found Judd's dead body and then is on his way back. Rachel drops Gage out of the window to him, like yeah. take that baby.
Yeah, she doesn't do it before he's there.
No. This was a tactical baby dropping. Mm, yeah. This is not. But yeah, she smashes the window, drops Gage out. Lewis puts Gage in the truck or in the car and is like, stay here. Don't open for anyone, not even your sister. You understand, right? You're like two.
Yeah. I'll either open the door immediately or die in this car.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dad.
But yeah, Ellie does manage to break back into the room before Mom can also get out through the window and stabs her a little.
Yeah. Enough.
Yeah, enough. But enough that they're like, she's not immediately dead. We're mm-hmm. able to have a conversation. And by conversation, I mean have Ellie taunt her about how she didn't care that she was dead. Like, you did nothing. You didn't save me. You did nothing, just like you did with your sister.
Yeah, you prayed for your sister to die.
Yeah, I didn't fucking pray for you to die, okay? So can you give me some slack? No.
No.
Hell. Super stabbed. And Rachel's last words are, don't bury me in that fucking place.
Yeah. Yeah, because Lewis comes in and she's like, no thank you. And Lewis is like, well, and then he gets bopped with a chair. And it turns out Ellie's going to bury her mom up in the pet cemetery.
That 9-year-old drags a fully grown woman all the way through the swamp and the wall and the stairs.
Mm-hmm. That's the plan. But Lewis is here to stop her.
Yeah, Dad comes too. He's chasing, going through. He's like, don't do that. But she's already done it.
Yeah.
Like, she's already buried Mom and is on her way back.
Yeah, you're right.
And Lewis is fighting this small child
in the pet cemetery,
like, choking her out on the ground. Yep. And then is like, wait, choking out is not enough. I need to stab her. I need to step on her and
cut her head off with a shovel. It's a classic. Shovel.
Yeah. But as he's like rearing up to do that, he gets speared with something, tree root.
I think it's like a metal, like impromptu pet marker. I think it's like sure. rebar that someone has made into a cross for a presumably especially metal pet.
Yeah, stabbed right through the chest with that by Rachel, of course, who mm-hmm. resurrected remarkably quickly and is down to zombie party.
Well, that's the benefit of being an adult, maybe.
Maybe.
You come back fast. You don't spend 4 hours floundering in the bone swamp.
No.
You're like, I'm an adult. It comes up to my mid-calf. I can
follow a path. I know where I'm going. Yeah, next thing you see, the whole undead family is walking out of the woods where they have also set Judd's house on fire.
Why did they set Judd's house on fire?
I don't know, so no one would know they had murdered him in there.
I feel like forensics will find the stabs.
We don't want to bring Judd back. We don't want to put him in the pet cemetery.
He has no friends. If you don't take him there, no one will.
Well, we don't. That's what we're saying. We don't want him there. And we don't want to get arrested for murder. So what are we going to do? We're going to cover up the murder. We'll get arrested
for arson.
We didn't do an arson.
You have a gas can, Undead Lewis.
It's the country. Farm accidents happen. Anyway, the whole undead family, like, walks up to the car where poor Gage is sitting, like a sitting, soon-to-be undead duck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end of the movie.
Yeah, it ends with the little beep of a car unlocking. And then a cover of the Ramones Pet Sematary song.
I mean, I was gonna rage if there was no Ramones in here.
Well, you can half rage, because it still weren't the Ramones.
No, but they knew what they had to do.
Yeah. And that's the Pet Sematary remake.
Yeah, that's the pet.
What'd you think?
Sematary. It's, like, dull.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, it's fine. Like, if the original Pet Sematary never existed, you'd be like, well, this is sort of a whatever adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
And the original Pet Sematary does exist, so it's, like, even less than a whatever adaptation, because it's an adaptation that didn't need to be.
Right.
Like, it adds nothing. It has nothing new to say. For all it's, like, we're gonna subvert. Like, we're just subverting expectation mildly, momentarily, in service of the exact same story anyway.
Yeah, the fact that nothing changes, despite changing which child dies, points to not having vision about making that change.
Yeah, like, instead of being dead at the end, we're gonna be undead at the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, there's so much you could do. Mm-hmm. Like, there's stuff to be said here about, like, grief and trauma and the stress of living and stuff. Like, we came out here for a quieter life. And now what the fuck? And mom's never gotten over her child trauma. And we met this weird neighbor who has a dead wife and a dead dog. But we don't want to talk about it. We just want to get to the zombie people.
We want to get to the parts you already know from the previous movie. And then we're going to do them pretty, like, perfunctorily. Like, there's no energy anywhere in this. Like, it's not poorly made, I wouldn't say, but it's like, why did you do this? Like, never has it been so clear that money is why we did this. I got the feeling no one cared about any part of this at all anywhere.
No,
there's no passion, there's no interest,
the girl who plays Ellie is pretty good. She does, like, convincing I'm dead
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Yeah.
She kind of looks like Drew Barrymore. Reminds me a little bit of baby Drew Barrymore. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Like, the cat is a good look. Like, it's a good looking cat, but it's not doing anything spectacular cat acting wise.
Right.
And I don't know. Yeah, there's just, like, it's sort of that. It's surface level.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing. There's no hook to it. There's not a great toddler actor. There's not a great cat actor. There's not. I don't know. Like
there's not that much in the way of, like, you know, special effects or whatever. Like, Pascal's gross. You see him for total 10 seconds, maybe. Like. it's no idea why this was made other than money.
Yeah. And like the Pascal stuff too is like they really like sort of bury it.
Yeah.
Because he's there, he looks bad, like good, bad. Mm-hmm. Like the effect of him like while he's dying is good. But then he like sits up, he says Lewis's name. When Lewis is telling Rachel about he said my name, I could not catch that line for the life of me. I had to rewind it like 3 times mm-hmm. and put on caption to hear him go, he said my name.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like later they're like, Gage was saying his name. And I'm like, I can't. No, he wasn't. Like as casually, not even more than casually watching this, I never would have been able to tell you that Gage was saying Pascal if you didn't tell me.
Right.
So it's like, why even have this?
Yeah.
Like he's doing nothing. He leads you out there and then says, and then he's there in the cemetery and he's like, I didn't try very hard, but I didn't stop you, so.
Yeah, like in the original movie, like the Pascal character was around a little more, like talked to him a little more, and I think eventually like appears to Rachel, right? Because it's like you can stop him, and it's like the tragedy is that she doesn't make it in time, but there's like there's momentum behind that. It's like it's weird, but you know you're trying to achieve something, and here she's just like, I had a vague bad feeling, and I feel coming home.
It all just sort of adds up better. Like, I don't feel like the original is heavy-handed at all, but you still get the point of, right. like, again, you're an ER physician who decided, I cannot do this anymore. Mm-hmm. I cannot work at a trauma center in a big city and deal with, like, death and dying and fucked up in that stuff volume. All the time.
Yeah.
So I'm going to move to rural Maine. And then guess what the first fucking thing that happens to me is this horrific accident. But I feel like we just don't see him, like, deal with it at all. Mm-mm. He has that one moment with his, like, head in his hands at a stoplight. And then the guy's fucking ghost starts appearing to him and he's just like, He's not upset enough.
Mm-mm, no. No. Like, I don't know if they were going for, like, realism in some way. We're just being like, well, if he's not going to tell anybody about it. But it's like, he's not even going to act disturbed.
Yeah, that's
disturbed.
Fine if he doesn't tell anyone about it. Like, you can have, you know, you're repressed. You just made a big speech about how there's no afterlife. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with trauma or burnout or whatever led you up here in the first place. And you're like, I can't shake it off. I thought I, you know, would be better in the country, and now I'm still freaking out. What's wrong with me? Even if it's what's wrong with me,
right?
Not, oh my God, I'm haunted. There's got to be something.
There's got to be something for the audience, I think. Like, he doesn't have to be demonstrative to his family, because it makes sense that he wouldn't be, because it is crazy that you're haunted. But there's, like, nothing for us either. Like, there's no private moment other than sit at red light, which is still not that much. The light is doing most of the work in that scene. And, like, I like that it's the big red light or whatever, but it's just, like, we should still see and feel it. Like, you should still be going through it. And they, like, skipped that part.
Yeah, if you have to if the only thing you could do is, like, call it out directly, at least do that.
Let me, like, see him make a face.
Yeah, like, why are you here? Leave me alone. I tried to save you. Like, something.
Yeah.
Like, be melodramatic with it.
Yeah.
Before you're just nothing.
Be with anything it. With it. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you gotta go big, go big. But truly, like, Jason Clarke, let me see you thinking on your face. And he doesn't do that. It's just like, no, he's like, this is my face for dealing with the world and it never changes. I'm normal man. I will cry a single tear on occasion when it is called for.
Because, yeah, it should be like, okay, the mom, Rachel, has the more overt trauma. She's got definite fucking problems from her childhood mm-hmm. that she hasn't dealt with. And it's, okay, up until now, she's been, you know, the emotional one, the sensitive one, the whatever. And now Lewis is also having some kind of supernatural freak out. Like,
yeah.
That's something.
Yeah.
Show it to me.
Yeah, and she, I mean, it's silly that even talking about why do pets die has her twitching and shaking. But you know what? It's something. It's like, oh, yeah. I see what's happening.
Yeah.
And just because it's a weird problem, well, I'm at the movies, it's fine. Like, she's doing something. And whether that was on the page or that's the choice this actress is making, it's the right one. Like...
Yeah, and it's like, it's Stephen King. Multiple supernatural things can be happening at once, mm-hmm. and usually are.
Yeah. Like, and guess what? In those books, people have feelings about it.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, this movie is about a cursed pet cemetery, but that doesn't mean people can't be also shining and mm-hmm. also haunted and also having feelings. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something.
Yeah, but... It just, they have not put in the connective tissue between the different points of their movie. And for the most part, it feels like they're doing what's on the page only, and because it's on the page and for no other reason.
Yeah. Yeah, and I haven't read Pet Sematary,
mm-hmm.
but I've read Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
And I just know there's more in there.
Of course.
Like, you don't have to do the exact same beats that the 1989 one did, because I know there's more weird shit in there. Like, do something different.
And again, the 1989 movie already did it.
Yeah.
Do something else. If you must do this again, do something else.
Like, we're not at all adapting the concept of Pet Sematary. We are just straight up remaking Pet Sematary.
Right.
And I went and looked at the IMDb trivia, and there's so much, and it's all so boring.
Great.
Because it's all like, yeah, we changed this because we wanted to be more sensitive, like with the Micmac and the spinal meningitis.
Mm-hmm.
And when we just thought it would be cool to be... different. And then the other half is just like very long explanations of cat training. They're like, to do this stunt, they put a squeaky toy and did this and that. I'm like, I don't fucking care.
Right.
Because this cat is, yeah, they're in the Animal Actors show at Universal Studios. They go from one mark to another. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all they're doing. This cat has no personality.
No.
R.I.P. to that cat, by the way. The main cat. The main one. There were like five of them. The main one died. But they literally describe him. He's like, he's a good sit and stay cat. Like, so that's his whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting and staying. And yeah, he does it. Good.
Yep.
He'll sit there at the end of the road while you drive away. He'll sit at the top of the stairs and look at you. I'm supposed to care?
Yeah.
Because why?
Dynamism. We need more dynamism. Come on.
I need something.
Anything.
I feel like Jason Clark's accent also slipped once when Ellie came back, when he mm-hmm. was like, my girl! I'm like, that was not right. That's not how you should sound.
Can we get a take two?
No. Absolutely not. Absolutely not, you common fucking trollop.
So here's the real question. We didn't cover Pet Sematary Bloodlines, but we talked about it on a front portion, yes, some number of months ago. Which do you prefer, Pet Sematary Bloodlines or Pet Sematary 2009?
I mean, they both... I don't know. Pet Sematary Bloodlines was nothing,
mm-hmm.
but this is like reheated nothing.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah, they're both bad. Bloodlines had two hospital pies.
It did have two hospital pies. And like watching this in light of having seen Bloodlines,
mm-hmm.
like, oh yeah, there's this whole backstory to Judd that we don't. No, and this movie does not care about.
Like, that bit is like one of the things Lewis Googles. Like, it's like, oh, Vietnam vet walking around house fire. David Duchovny was his dad. Like, but yeah, that's a whole Judd story that Judd is not in this movie.
Yeah, it's like, so Judd, you know a lot about our house and the cursed land, you buried at least your dog and definitely probably nothing else over there.
Not that you'll know.
What's your deal? Like, why do you stay if you know it's cursed and evil? I'm not going to ask the question.
He just walks in the opposite direction.
So you don't get are you like charged with guarding anything?
Did Henry Thomas die in your house or?
Yeah. And it's like looking at Judd's house too. It struck me like early on because again, we're moving this movie forward 30 years. Mm-hmm. I'm like, however old he's supposed to be, 60 or 70 or whatever. Like this is not really the house of a 60 or 70 year old. It's really old fashioned. It's more like a grandparent or great grandparent's house. And you're like, okay, well, that's explained. Like family homes are different.
They're different.
Like it's hard to change things and you're used to how they are. And so it would probably be old fashioned and whatever. But this movie doesn't know that.
No.
For all you know, fucking Judd moved there 2 years ago.
Right.
I mean, he talks about his childhood dog, but it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, no.
It's just not anything.
You can, like, make those assumptions and think about that, but that's you doing a lot of work for the movie.
And you haven't seen Pet Sematary 1989.
Right, yeah. This movie's like, Pet Sematary 1989, will you carry my books and also me? And Pet Sematary 89 has no choice, because it is not a being with agency, but it should say no. That's a perfectly good movie. Go watch that one instead.
I love Pet Sematary.
It's fun.
The original. It's fun.
Yeah. I look forward to sometime watching Pet Sematary 2, which I hear is crazy. But yeah, never again for this one.
Sometimes dead is better.
Sometimes dead is better, as they say. I can't believe this 4-movie pack Mom got us is almost all duds. I remember Overlord being fine, and the other ones,
seen it.
Well, maybe someday we'll pop it in, check it out. Wyatt Russell's in it. It was the loudest movie I'd ever seen in theaters.
Oh shit.
Nazis, zombies, it was fine. Is there anything else you'd like to say about Pet Sematary 2009? I'm sorry, 2019.
What if there was a Pet Sematary 2009?
Who would be in it?
Who would be in it? Gosh, what a dead zone of
yeah, I'm like, who was charisma. In any movie? All right, hold on. Movies in 2009. Remind me what was coming out.
Patrick Dempsey.
That seems like a pretty good choice.
Patrick Dempsey is Dr. Lewis Creed.
I mean, he looks like that first guy.
Yeah, so it could be like Renee Zellweger as Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
Who's Judd?
Who would be a good Judd? Who's a good old man in 2009?
What's Gene Hackman?
That was his last movie instead of Welcome to Mooseport.
Welcome to Mooseport. Welcome to Ludlow.
That'd be, you know what? Pretty good. Wow, Inglourious Basterds came out in 2009? That's not helping me. If you want to make a decision more in line with 2019's Pet Sematary, you could put Avatar's Sam Worthington in as Lewis Creed.
That would be terrible. That would be terrible.
It would be bad. I think Patrick Dempsey's a much better choice.
Because, like, if you're doing a good Dr. Creed, he should have some charisma.
Yeah. I mean,
he's a fucking ER doctor. Like, yeah. It's even if he's sad and burnt out or whatever, like, you gotta have energy. You gotta have something to do that.
Yeah, I think we talked about it when we covered the original, because I don't remember the guy who plays Lewis. He did fine. But, like, originally it was supposed to be Bruce Campbell in that role in the 89 movie. It's like that
fits.
Yeah, great. Sad it didn't work out, but hey, that's fine. Other guy did fine. Patrick Dempsey stepping out of Grey's Anatomy, maybe. I don't know when he left that show and into I'm a different doctor now. I make worse decisions. Come to Pet Sematary.
Not so McDreamy or whatever now, whichever one I was.
Yeah. I think he had to be McDreamy because that was the first name.
I think so.
I'm getting so many Hulu ads about how that show is still on.
It's still on.
That's incredible. Weirdly, there's nothing like a show, a fiction show, not a reality show, saying I'm on season 20 to make me be like, should I watch that? The answer is no. I don't watch television, but...
But you should watch 20 seasons of Grey's Anatomy.
No, that's the stupidest decision I could make. I got other things to watch. I gotta get back to Big Wolf on Campus. I got other things to do.
Tommy Dawkins.
Is he a werewolf in the OC?
No, he's a tennis instructor.
Can you pretend he's a werewolf?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a tennis instructor turned gigolo.
Tommy's life is going weird.
Yeah. He's got a 6-episode arc.
6? Good for him. Yeah. All right. Well, I think goodbye, Pet Sematary.
Yeah. Should have done more Maine accents.
Should have.
Should have made Jason Clark do a Maine accent. I know you're not even from here.
What but... if he moved there and immediately started with the Maine accent and no one else had it? And they're like, what's his problem? And then he's like, what's wrong with me?
I've been possessed by Maine?
That'd be great. Tell that story. The ground's evil and then it gets in Jason Clark.
There is no Judd character because I have just been possessed by spirit and I am Judd now.
Yeah, I'm Lewis and Judd. They're the same guy. I gotta fight myself. Well, we don't have any emails, but if you'd like to email us, you can do so at horrorandahalf@gmail.com. That's horrorandahalf, all words, all lowercase, all smushed together.
You can also get at us on Twitter @horrorandahalf. Follow us for news and announcements. Come chat with us. Tell us what other listless remakes we should avoid. Tell us who your favorite pet animal actors are. Mm-hmm. What's scarier than a dead cat?
2 dead cats.
Oh.
Anything you put up in the Pet Sematary comes back as an evil cat. What about that?
Like, is that our daughter? The evil cat?
The evil cat?
And yeah, what if the things that are buried in the upstairs Pet Sematary come back in bodies of the pets buried in the downstairs Pet Sematary?
Great. Perfect. And Judd's like, we never put a person up there before. I didn't know.
Yeah. We didn't know the dead bloodhound would be staring at you with your daughter's soulful eyes.
Oh no, my wife's in a dead goldfish.
Oh no.
She's just flip-flopping around.
Oh no, well she's about to be dead again.
Well, she can't kill me like that, so that's a win for Dr. Creed.
Hell yeah.
Next time. So... Next time, we're not coming out in 2 weeks, because Rose and I are going to Los Angeles.
We're going on vacation!
We're going to Disney. We're going to other places. We're spending like a week in California.
Woo!
We might go see movies.
Maybe.
We will not be recording a podcast.
No.
Sorry. So it'll be a week late. We'll record it mere days after we get home. And Rose had the genius idea of we should do an L.A. horror movie, of which we've already done some.
Yeah, most.
As she mentioned before we got started, the directors of this movie's previous film, Starry Eyes, takes place in L.A. And this movie crossed that one right off the list. No, thank you. So we're going to be watching Clive Barker's Lord of Illusions. Or Illusion. I don't remember if it's singular or plural, and I apologize for that.
Illusions.
Okay, good. If you only had the one illusion, it would be less impressive.
It's like, oh, you made the moon disappear. Big fucking deal.
I mean, it's cool, but that's the one thing you got. And David Copperfield's like, I do it every night at my show. And they're like, get a puppet, David. Then he invented Blue 52. It was a whole thing. Scott's got Bakula in it. Mom, if you're listening to this episode, you make it to the end. Scott Bakula. He's the main character, I'm pretty sure. I've seen this, but it's been a literal decade, so I don't remember fuck all about it. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Welcome to LA.
Yeah. We can compare how it matches up. Yeah, to our trip. Did any evil magicians try to kill us?
For real LA landmarks. Real LA evil magicians.
Right.
Yeah. Until then, you've been booed, treat.